1 p.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the February 16th, 2022 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order. And Ms. Griska, would you please take the roll?
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Representative Carlson's present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer is present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen excused. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sundell.
Present.
Representative Sundell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joaquin.
Joaquin present.
Representative Joaquin present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. And with that, just want to say that we're meeting under Rule 10.01, which deals with remote hearings, and want to inform those who are watching this Zoom that you can get all the materials and information if you go to the Minnesota Legislature website, then go to the Minnesota House of Representatives, then go to committees and divisions, and go to the Taxes Committee. And on that homepage in the lower right hand are all of the attachments you need for this meeting. Also want to remind members that we do have two bills on the agenda for today. And the second bill, House File 2900, we're going to be taking a roll call vote. I just want to give members a heads up on that. Also, members, there was a referral memo to the Property Tax Division that was sent yesterday. That's now on the website, so hopefully you would have had that. So the first order of business is approval of the February 9th, 2022 minutes. Representative Lislegard, would you like to move those minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegard moves approval of the February 9th, 2022 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I will ask you to temporarily unmute yourself as we call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 9th, 2022 minutes are approved. So members, today and then tomorrow, we've got some bills that deal with what we talked about a couple meetings ago. Kind of one of the major goals of the Tax Committee is to deal with a big economic challenge, and that is a workforce shortage. And we know that workforce shortage is impacting our economy quite a bit. It's leading to inflation, rising prices, supply chain disruptions. You look at the medical field, childcare, law enforcement, teaching. Almost every profession is seeing shortages. And so one of the major goals of the Tax Committee is how can we, and we know one of the big reasons for the workforce shortage is the fact that baby boomers like myself are retiring and there's not enough young people replacing us. Demographers have talked about this for 20 years. And so one of the major ways to bring people into the workforce is how can we not only retain, but how can we attract young workers and families, keep them here, but also attract new young workers and families into Minnesota. And so in the next 2 days, you're going to hear some very big and bold proposals. And with these big and bold proposals, they're going to come with some big price tags also. But I have heard more than one tax chair and a couple sitting around the Zoom right now that talked about that tax committee is where you can talk about big ideas. And that's what we're going to be talking about with Representative Herr's bill today on the student loan credit expansion, and tomorrow, Representative Katitza Watoon's child care and dependent credit, which is going to be the Great Start credit. These are big, bold, game-changing type of proposals, and it's in this tax committee that we can talk about that. And how things wind up depends on targets and so forth, but the next couple of days, you know, it's a chance to talk about these ideas and how it can really impact people's lives day in and day out. And I will tell you, in the next 2 days, none of these are new plans. These have been plans that have been supported in the past bipartisan fashion. And in fact, the student loan credit was started in 2017 under the leadership of Chair Davids. In fact, Minnesota was the first state to come up with the student loan credit. So what we're talking about are things that have bipartisan support, but just greatly expanding, and how can we really make a difference in, again, retaining and attracting young workers and families into the state. So with that, Representative Herr, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 3072?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 3752 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, House File 3772 laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Herr, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members for hearing House File 3072, a bill that seeks to increase the maximum student loan credit. This is an important bill, as Chair Marquardt just stated. When our current student loan tax credit was included in the 2017 omnibus, Minnesota was the first in the nation to act at that level. At the same time, we were trying to address our nation's crushing student debt issue, which was $1.36 trillion at that time. In just 5 years, that amount has increased by almost 30% to $1.75 trillion. Student loan debt is projected to only increase. I want to build on the legacy of this work, which, as Chair Marquardt stated earlier, that it started under the leadership of Chair Davids. By modifying our current law to meet the needs of everyday Minnesotans and working class Minnesotans, we will be able to really address the needs of those who are carrying these large amounts of debt. Chair and members, House File 3072 modifies the existing student loan tax credit in three ways. One, it increases the maximum credit for $500 to $5,000. Two, it increases the income-based phase-out from $10,000 to $50,000. And it modifies the earned income limitation and makes the credit refundable. In 2019, 50,900 Minnesotans benefited from the current credit. Under this new bill, based on the 2019 tax filings, 132,400 additional Minnesotans would be eligible. I just want to provide just a little bit of background on really understanding the student debt and who this impacts and can be applied to, is that just over 43 million, or 1 in 8 Americans, have student loan debt. Federal statistics show that 77% of borrowers are under 50, and they hold approximately 77% of the total debt. Studies have shown that student loan debt has negative impacts on homeownership, marriage, and birth rates, enrollment in postgraduate education, and increases the probability of parental cohabitation for longer periods post-graduation. I want to just focus on one particular point in the list that I just stated, that is the birth rates. Over the course of the past few months, the state demographer has presented in multiple committees. Many of you have probably seen the presentations in other committees that you've been a part of. Their data showed our death rate exceeding our birth rate. Minnesota already has a worker shortage problem. This issue will only get worse if we do not do anything to attract and retain young, educated workers. Whether you went to a public or private college, you went to school in-state or out-of-state, or took out public or private loans, what this bill does is encourage those who are college educated to move to Minnesota to work to live, spend, start a family, and to thrive. Chair, there is much, much more that I could say about this bill that is why this bill is important and necessary, but I do have a number of people here today who would like to testify on behalf of this bill. At this time, I would like to yield my time so that we can hear from them.
Very good, Representative Herr. And before we go any further, because this is the Tax Committee and we deal with numbers here, if you have seen the revenue estimate for House File 3072, it's about $430 million in fiscal 23, and then in the next 2 years, $438 and $446 million. So like I said, big ideas come with big price tags, and that's what we're looking at today. So, all right. So I want to mention also before we go to testifiers that on our website, the Tax Committee website, are 8 letters of support. And we really appreciate also when we get letters of support. So those are there for members and audience to see. And I appreciate very much those who took the time to send those in. So because we do have a number of testifiers, what I would like to do is to, if you could hold your testimony to about 2 minutes, I'll give a little leeway, but keep it to about 2 minutes, and we'll go on the benefits of House File 3072. So I've got a list here. So first on the list is Megan Finnegan. Megan Finnegan?
Hi there.
Very good. So there you are. Thank you. If you would please identify yourself for the committee and then proceed with your testimony.
Yep. My name is Megan Finnegan. I use she, her pronouns. What else?
That's good.
Okay, sorry. I will get started. So thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee for hearing this bill. My name is Megan Finnegan, and I'm here today to share my support of Bill 3072, because I feel that those who have student debt shouldn't have to make the hard choices of being able to pay for their monthly loan payment or be able to afford their heating bills in the winter. This tax credit would go a long way to provide folks much needed relief for student debt. I grew up in Little Canada, Minnesota, 10 minutes from downtown St. Paul. I grew up in a loving home with a first generation single mother, younger sister, and a supportive family. As the oldest daughter, I was the first person in my family to attend a 4-year college and graduate with a bachelor's degree. I was grateful and fortunate that my grandmother had left me a little money to help me try to cover my first year tuition, but I always knew that if I was going to go to college, that it was going to be up to me to get myself through financially. As I was growing up, family, teachers, and community members always had this agreed upon notion that secondary education would give you a happy life. There was always this expectation and a promise of a financially stable, comfortable, and worry-free future if you went to college. If you went to college, then you would be able to pay rent and get groceries without worries. If you went to college, you could afford the heat to be set at 70 degrees in the winter. If you went to college, you could afford that large $5 iced coffee once a week as a treat. With that mantra in mind, I attended the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth, Minnesota, where I knew their program would prepare me best for my career as a nurse. While I did choose to receive a private secondary education, I was able to obtain enough scholarships and grants that my private education cost about the same as a public state school like the U of M. Because surely, if I went to college, received the right education, and paid the same amount as a state school, then that promised future would be in my grasp. I would have some debt, but it would be manageable because a lot of people had the same amount and they had that promised future, at least as far as I knew. Before I graduated in 2019, I already had a job waiting for me as a pediatric and adolescent mental and behavioral health RN, and I felt like everything was aligning. During school, I'd kept that promised future in my head and visualized it at the top of a staircase. It was going to be a lot to pay off, but at that time, I felt it was possible. As my grace period was ending and my first payment date for my student loans approached, I realized that paying over $700 a month for the next 10 to 20 years was my new reality, and very much not possible. Lending institutions knowingly take advantage and prey on those of us who know we can't afford the $20,000 tuition rates.
Ms. Finnegan, if you would finish up, please. Thanks.
I, like many others, were willing to risk the mind-consuming burden of life-altering debt for that promise of a financially stable, comfortable, and worry-free future by receiving secondary education because we needed to. because I dared to dream of a future where I could afford not just my rent, but my groceries, bills, cost of daily life, and yes, even that $5 iced coffee. Why are we being punished for the necessary education for the life we want? We shouldn't have to make the choice of being engulfed by life-altering for financial burden for student debt so that we can have a better life. Thank you for listening. A tax credit like this would be hugely impactful for those who have student debt like me. Thank you, Representative Herr, for inviting me into the space and allowing me to share my story.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Helen White, and Eric Bernstein's on deck. Helen White?
Hi, everybody. Thank you for your time.
Please identify yourself for the committee and please proceed.
Okay, hello, and thank you, Chairman Mark, how do you say it?
Marquardt.
Marquardt, thank you. And committee members, my name is Helen White. I'm the director at Quality Kids Care Center in Rochester. I would like to share my story and how student loans have impacted my life and continue to do so. I'm 38 years old, and I have 30,000 of student loans. Sadly, I barely have an associate's degree to show for it. I started college after high school to study social work and Spanish. I was a straight-A student. However, I only had a $500 scholarship. I would not have been able to go to college at all without the student loans, but the loans and minimum wage jobs were not enough. I received a letter from my school in the spring of my third year stating that my student loans had run out. If I could not pay $800, I would not be able to continue. A college student barely scraping by on a minimum wage job and student loans does not have $800. I was forced to stop my education. Only several years later, after securing a scholarship from Workforce for a dislocated workers program and another student loan, I was able to finish an associate's degree in accounting. In addition to all of this, I'm a single mother. When my son was small, I could not afford to work because I could not afford childcare. I was on a waiting list for CCAP, Child Care Assistance Program, and by the time I was able to receive it, I no longer qualified. My pay rate at the child care center had gone up from $12 an hour to $14, which meant I was somehow making too much money to qualify. Thankfully, my boss, who I continue to work for today, let me bring him to the center for free just so I could work. I couldn't afford child care, and I certainly can't afford my student loans. I have continued to work in child care because it's my true calling. I love my job, my families, and I love the kids. Despite that success, I live paycheck to paycheck because of my job. I worry constantly about making ends meet. I worry that my son, for to go to college, he'll have to take out student loans himself and then be in debt the rest of his life. I do not have savings. I do not have retirement. I can barely afford to fix my broken windshield on my car, let alone allow my son to drive my car or somehow purchase him one. And he's 15 and wanting to learn how to drive by 16, but he would need a car. And my boss is so good to me. However, even with how well she's, you know, taking good care of me and with what she has, you know, despite needing more support as a center from the state, the rent is just so high in Rochester and the cost
Ms.
of living
White,
with
Ms.
every
Ms. White, if you could finish up, please. Yep. That's time. If you could
okay.
That up,
yeah. Please. It's still just such a struggle. It's not enough. And so that's why I'm a staunch advocate for student loan forgiveness. And I also wanted to point out, we are primarily the ones preventing things like the Columbine school shooting. We are working with the next generation of children. And I just wish that we had our own futures to look forward to, not just the families we're helping. So please, we literally need every cent we can get. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for testifying today.
You're welcome.
Eric Bernstein is next, and Laura Gagnon is on deck. So Mr. Bernstein, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, members of the committee. My name is Eric Bernstein, and I am policy director at We Make Minnesota. Thanks for having me here today to testify in favor of HF 3072, which would provide much needed relief to Minnesotans saddled with student debt. While there's many other testifiers here today that will rightly speak to the personal strain that student loans have placed on their lives, my remarks will center on the broader social catastrophe that they represent. As Chair Marquardt has often reminded this committee, Minnesota, like the country as a whole, is aging rapidly. In 2010, there were 5 workers for every senior. Today, that ratio is nearly 3-1. Already, we're seeing workforce challenges in hospitals, schools, and businesses across the state, and this is only going to worsen as the senior population continues to grow relative to the workforce for the next decade. Weathering this crisis will require that we make Minnesota a more appealing and supportive place for people to live, settle, and start a family. Student loans disrupt that process, as we've been hearing, by preventing saving, home purchases, and the sense of stability that everyone desires before getting married or having kids. This bill could help change that by relieving younger Minnesotans of a major financial burden. It could also be a game changer for Minnesotans aged 18 to 24 who make up more than 70% of our net out migration. The same could be said of entrepreneurs looking to start a business or mid-career professionals looking to pursue additional training. The simple fact is that student debt binds our potential at every turn, and this bill offers the opportunity to be a leader for Minnesota to be a leader in breaking that cycle. This is important as loans become an increasingly driving force in our economy. Tuition today is higher, loans are bigger, and for better or worse, the economic necessity of college is greater. In 2021, the median worker with a bachelor's degree earned 65% more than the median worker with a high school diploma, and that worker was half as likely to be unemployed. This bill is a necessary adjustment to a new reality, and it will greatly strengthen our state and the welfare of nearly 1 million Minnesotans carrying student debt. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was right on time. So thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Next, we have Laura Gannon and then Sarah Jessa on deck. So Laura Gannon.
I'm right here.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and proceed.
Sure. My name is Laura Gannon. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee for hearing this bill. I'm here today to share my support of HF3072 because I struggle with student loan payments. My name is Laura Gannon. I currently live with my husband and two children in Circle Pines. I graduated from Cal Poly Pomona in 2008 with my Master's of Electrical Engineering, which is when my student loan payment journey began. I accumulated six figures in student debt because I had started my college education at Loyola Marymount University, where tuition was astronomical. I came from a single parent family where my mother could not even afford rent. In the summer of my freshman year of college, every cent I made at my summer job went to help the family. However, I had affluent aunts and uncles who encouraged me to attend their alma mater. And I met with student loan officers who assured me I could pay back these loans within 10 years of my salary as an engineer. And they really thought I would be able to pay them based on all the feedback from the adults in my life. But what they didn't know is that once women in engineering become mothers, the opportunities to advance and make a better salary decrease significantly. After my first child became seven, I couldn't afford rent in the city I was living in California and with the salary I had, with the job I had for 10 years. So this is what brought me to Minnesota, a job that paid better with a better cost of living. I thought maybe I could start paying back my loans. However, child two was born with trisomy X, and I had to use my student loan payment to pay for daycare, as well as worry about medical expenses for trisomy X. The truth of the matter is that I can barely pay a mortgage payment, daycare, healthcare, much less a student loan payment, which all amount to three mortgages in price. So growing up, I never imagined that I would have to make enough money to pay three mortgages plus the basic expenses of living. I also did not anticipate that when I signed my student loan contract at 18. I'm being squeezed at every financial angle, and I wouldn't wish this feeling on my worst enemy. A tax credit that would provide some relief to my family's finances would be a cause of celebration in our home. Thank you, Representative Herb, for inviting me into this space and allowing me to share my story.
Thank you for your testimony today. Appreciate that. Next is Sarah Jessa, and on deck is Allison Green.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, and I probably did not pronounce your last name correctly.
It's okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Jessa, and I am a senior at the University of Minnesota, and I am also a student loan borrower. I took out my first private student loan when I was 18 years old at my first university and had to transfer after one semester because of the expense. Ever since that day, I have questioned whether or not this was all worth it. Despite the very hard work of my parents, their funds were limited due to extenuating circumstances. FAFSA only indicated that I was eligible for very few aid opportunities, and most of it was through their different loan options. My parents were unable to aid in my college education, and because of my own disability-related concerns, I was unable to work full-time while being a student, but I often pushed myself to the brink to try. After a year and a half of community college, I transferred to the University of Minnesota, and that's when my loan balance skyrocketed. My mental health and quality of life have suffered, and so has my education. Even with my parents being responsible to pay for my brother's funeral last May, there were no options for me to be eligible for the appeals that FAFSA has in place. The pressure of starting my career off in a life-altering debt and knowing to become a therapist, I still have to go to grad school, has caused me significant distress. People often tell me education is an investment, but fail to realize that investments often pay off and student loans stick with you for the duration of your life if you don't have the financial privilege and means to beat the interest rates and pay things off quickly. My story is one of hundreds of thousands in the state of Minnesota, and I urge you to consider the good you could do in the lives of borrowers like myself. As someone going into a work field with a severe labor shortage, expanding the tax credit will help people pursue degrees in related fields like counseling. Committee members, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. Thank you. Next up is Ellison Green, and on deck, Ellie Tomaszek. So, Ellison Green.
Hello.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for everybody for listening and for all my fellow testifiers too. My name is Allison. I'm a South Minneapolis resident. I'm 36 years old and I have $32,000 in private and federal student debt. Because my family was unable to help with tuition, I graduated college with $65,000 of loans in 2008. Great timing. By 2011, I found myself ineligible for more AmeriCorps terms, ineligible to continue interest-only payments on my private loans, and unable to find a job that paid enough to cover the upcoming $700 monthly student loan bill. So I went back to school to try to get a better job, because that's what we're told. In 2014, I moved to Minneapolis with an old car, enough cash to pay my first month's rent, and $80,000 of student loans. When my car died, I started my first savings account. Since then, I've been putting all my extra cash into savings with hopes of someday becoming a homeowner. I feel like I've done all the right things as a renter, lived in cheap places, moved when rent increased, and split rent with lots of housemates. Yet my debt-to-income ratio is still high enough to price me out of the neighborhood I've worked hard to stay connected to here. I know that for every story like mine, there's at least one that involves growing debt and no savings for emergencies or future hopes and dreams. And working in higher ed gives me the privilege of being in solidarity with students who are just starting to feel this weight of debt, many of whom are first generation and BIPOC students who have more inequities stacked against them than I do. So for me, an increase in the student loan credit would mean being one step closer to home ownership and a little less stressed about the future. For you lawmakers, it would mean you see and hear us. You understand we are trying to take responsibility for the financial decisions we made while getting an education. And you understand that factors beyond our control, like recessions and inflated housing markets, are keeping us from living our dreams. And you're doing something to make things a little bit more equitable in Minnesota. So thank you for listening and considering.
Very good. Thank you for that testimony. Next up is Ellie Tomaszek, and on deck, Haopei Lee. So, Ellie Tomaszek. Oh, there you are. Very good. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Marquette and the committee members. My name is Ali Tomaszek. I'm a 27-year-old student at North Hennepin Community College, and I'm very proud to say that I'm a non-traditional student, as I've conquered many obstacles to be able to enroll in college again as an older adult. Back in 2013, I first enrolled in a four-year university, but unfortunately I struggled through a part-time job that only paid minimum wage that could hardly cover the cost of rent, groceries, or other bills. Sadly, this caused me to drop out of college. And the high expense of tuition that I had committed to that I could never truly afford was paralyzing. After 6 months of dropping out, I couldn't afford the payments on my loans, so I defaulted and my credit score plummeted. This painted such a dim future for my goals of living an independent adult life because I couldn't find a place to rent with a low credit score and I couldn't get a loan for a vehicle without a cosigner. And I was stuck working multiple part-time jobs just trying to get by and living at my parents' house. It's tough for me to share my experiences, but I believe it's important to share the impact that student loans have had on my personal life, as well as many other lives of students that I know. I believe that increasing the student loan credit would help provide students like me with the opportunity for true economic and social mobility in Minnesota. Minnesota has the 7th highest community and technical college fees in the nation, leading students to take on the burdensome debt that can be crushing for their future chances at financial stability. I'm talking about students who are pursuing degrees to be nurses, police officers, welders, electricians, HVAC technicians, or political science majors like myself, and many more jobs that are critical and needed in our state. If we want to ensure that these Minnesotans can continue to buy homes, start families, create businesses, and participate in our local economies, then we need to help reduce the burden of student loan debt. I'm really grateful for all I've learned about student loans and finances through my college career, but I sincerely hope that future students don't have to struggle through the same obstacles that I had to. This tax credit would have an impact on so many students' lives. And as we've seen, individual lives are constantly changing. From the past 2 years, we've learned how uncertain circumstances can really be. I believe it's time to provide more opportunities for students and graduates to find economic security. We see there's no clear-cut path for success, so I hope that you can help.
Ms. Tomaszek, could you finish up, please?
Yep, absolutely.
That's time. Okay.
No problem. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for letting me speak today.
And thanks for sharing, all of you. I appreciate really putting things in perspective that we really understand what all of you and how this can make a difference in so many different ways. So thank you. Next is Hao Pei Lee, and on deck, James McGee. So Hao Pei Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Hao Pei Lee. All right, so good afternoon, Chair Markwart and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Hao Pei Lee, and I'm here to testify in support of Representative Hurst Bill HF3072. As a profession, I work for Violence Free Minnesota, the Minnesota State Coalition on Ending Relationship Abuse, but I'm here today as a student loan borrower. I'm currently a graduate student at Metro State in the Masters of Advocacy and Political Leadership program and will be graduating this spring. I support this bill because in addition to being a student and working full-time, I am a single mother to a child with a traumatic brain injury and now with special needs. So I'd like to share with you all how the intersections of my identities have been and will be affected by student loans. While graduation rates among Asian American Minnesotans have increased, Minnesota has the highest poverty rate among Asian American children in the nation. As a second generation Hmong American, I'm the first female to attend a 4-year college and the first person in my family to pursue a postgraduate degree. My family made enough for me to not qualify for any government-based programs that help low-income families in higher education, nor did they know how to navigate financial aid systems. Being the first meant that I had to learn how to navigate all of these systems on my own while trying to be successful in higher education. We've been told to go to college, get a high-paying job, and that will solve our financial problems. What we're not told is that our lives are not linear. It's not predicted whether or not we would have children with disabilities. And my family is 1 in 5 families in Minnesota that has a child with special health needs. As a parent to someone who has special needs, my main priority is to create a safe and handicap accessible home for my child. My growing child will need a home where he can grow safely to give him the best quality of life possible. And people like me, who are primary caretakers of child with disabilities, are the lower middle class and in a single income home, fall into the gap of not being able to find accessible housing and access programs that help with home buying. Having a home, especially one that it can be modified, is a necessity and a timely one. I'm aware that having school loans have affected my ability to purchase a home, but my child cannot wait for me to pay off my student loans for that home. I understand that higher education was a personal choice that I made. I also know that it is my education that has led me to be a strong advocate for causes such as domestic violence. As someone who truly is invested in creating a violence-free world so that not only my child, but future generations can thrive in, I'm asking for your support in HF3072 to help people like me who fall in the margins. You have the ability and privilege to support a bill that will lighten the burdens that we carry so that we can thrive in the many intersections of our lives. therefore increasing our ability to contribute to society and leading to a larger economic impact. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next is James McGee, and Anthony Mackey is on deck. So Mr. McGee, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Hi there. Thank you so much. My name is James McGee. I am a 25-year-old Minnesota resident. I live in Minneapolis. I went to a public university in Michigan and graduated in 2018 with a bachelor's of science in civil engineering. I have approximately $75,000 in student loans. My parents both suffered greatly in the 2008 recession, acquired quite a bit of debt. They went to school during the time too. By the time I was going to school, they were both working, but were making too much to qualify or for me to qualify for any significant financial aid, and didn't have the money to support me through it. So I had to borrow my way through school. I have to pay about approximately 18% of my take-home income on student loans at the rate I'm paying now. And at that rate, I'll pay it off by the time I'm 32 or so. This has caused me to slow down my financial personal goals, like owning a house or considering starting a family. My situation is what I consider fairly good. A good outcome compared to a lot of other people, a lot of my peers. I found a job right away. I'm fairly well paid in my field. And I never had to switch majors or have any disastrous or unforeseen life events happen. But I still have to put off some major choices. And I feel like HF 3072 would help myself and it would help a lot of other people. Sort of a rising tides thing. I'd like to thank you for having me on and for hearing this bill. I'd like to thank Representative Herr for leading this charge. That's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that. Anthony Mackey and then Ivana Stark is on deck. So there you are.
Hello.
Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt, Representative Herr, members of the committee, and fellow testifiers. My name is Anthony Mackey. I'm 31 years old, and I live in Minneapolis, and this testimony will be in support of House File 3072. I'm a mid-level software engineer who's been in the field for about 5 years. I started this career without any undergraduate degree, but rather through self-teaching and downtown's Prime Digital Academy software engineering bootcamp program. However, I'm not without student debt. During grade school, as many of my fellow testifiers attest, we were ingrained with the notion that a post-secondary education is essential to an adult career. Of course, for some students, this is the right course for them. At the time I was quote unquote ready to go to college, I went in with no support. My only choice was to accept what aid I qualified for and to take loans for the rest, whose balances now exceed $65,000. People often talk about whether unemployment and other government services trap them in a cycle of poverty. I think this student debt crisis is worth looking at in this lens. The liberal arts education I did get was very valuable to me. It was very valuable to me, but my loans didn't get me what I was looking for, a passion, a job, a means to escape them. I found that myself, but the continued burden on me and others has prevented us and continues to prevent us from fully participating in our economy. It always requires us to perform a difficult calculus before any life decision, decision paralysis, if you will. Paycheck to paycheck, no savings, diminished mental health. In reading House File 3072, I believe the language will go a long way pending possible federal action towards more much needed relief for me and my similarly situated peers. I urge its passage. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. And next we have Ivana Stark.
He promised to be good, so fingers crossed.
Welcome to the committee, both of you, and you only need to state your name officially.
Okay. Chair Marquardt members, thank you for your time. My name is Ivana Stark, and this little guy is Huntley. I also have an 18-year-old who's a senior at Fridley High School. I'm 38 years old, and I received my AA degree from North Hennepin, my undergrad from the U of M, and my master's from George Washington University in DC. I'm a school board member, and I work full-time. I borrowed a total of $50,000 in 2008 and now owe over $70,000. My partner and I have been together for over 20 years and are afraid to get married because if my repayment plan is calculated off both of our incomes together, we fear we would lose our house. We waited 18 years for a second child because loan payments compete with daycare costs. I was 20 when my first son was born and worked three jobs while going to school to give him a better life. At times, I was paying more than my mortgage for my student loan payments. I lost my job while in college during the first recession, and my loan servicer pushed me into deferment even though I could still afford small payments. Interest was tacked on top of interest, and the length of my loan was stretched out despite payments of well over $1,000 a month. I now owe $20,000 more than what I borrowed in the first place. I've made over $100,000 worth of payments in the last 14 years. This legislation will help families like mine. I was targeted by a predatory loan and may never pay them off. My senior in high school has a 4.2 GPA and is not going to college because he fears being in debt like me. I've done everything right. I went to school like I was told. I got a good job. I made my payments on time. We carry no credit card debt. My car is paid off, and yet we can't catch up. This legislation means groceries on the table, shoes on feet, and heated houses. My partner and I are lucky we're not going to, you know, see our lights shut off, but that's not the case for many of my friends. I'm also here for them, my friends working hourly jobs who can't take off work to talk about how hard it is to work, feed kids, and make loan payments. You have an opportunity to pass this tax credit and give countless families a moment to breathe and pay a lingering bill. I, for one, will use this tax credit to pay towards the hospital bill we have from this guy's birth, but we won't get into healthcare policy now. So please help us catch up and help us catch our breath. I appreciate it. Say thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Stark, you had gone over time, but I gave you another 30 seconds just because your baby's so cute. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on House File 3072? Well, I really want to thank all of the testifiers. That was very powerful testimony on talking about how student loan debts impact your lives and create obstacles to be able to do other things. So I really, really appreciate that. And one thing that is the strength of this bill that Chair Davids, when he first put this into effect, is that, and you heard from the testifiers, that a lot of them went to college outside the state. So these loans apply to loans that were to colleges outside the state, but you've got to live in Minnesota to get the credit. So, I mean, here's a way in which we're going to look at attracting people into the state. So we'll go Representative McDonald's and then Chair Davids. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the author, Representative Herr. Just wondering, in your research in crafting this tax credit, if you had an opportunity to speak with President Gable and or the Board of Regents and other colleges as to how they can go forward by putting a freeze or making colleges affordable with tuition. Seems like a lot of universities are pretty bloated and top heavy and therefore have to make it up with high tuition. So just curious if you have done some of that work and what the response has been for the Board of Regents and President Gable.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and Chair and Representative McDonald for that question. And actually, I did not get a chance to touch base with him specifically on this part of on this bill, but I have met with President Gable on multiple occasions to talk about the university's budget and also around tuition. but I think that it is always worth looking back and having a conversation. I'm actually very concerned about private institutions that actually the tuition is much, much higher, and those that are for-profit institutions that charge a great amount for tuition, and then also private lenders who are actually, as one of our testifiers mentioned, are predatory in their practices with very high rates and sometimes very high variable rates. And so there's actually many, many people that need to be brought into this conversation to address this issue and to tackle it head on, because a lot of people play a part into why things are the way that they are. But I do appreciate your question, and I will absolutely look back with President and Gable and to have a conversation with her about the university and the role that they're and how they can participate in alleviating the situation.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, President, and Representative Herb. And I acknowledge your in recognition of predatory lenders is very important and should be a part of this debate as well. I'll just close with this, Mr. Chair, and anyone else that is watching that maybe has younger kids. We have done a discredit to our young adults in school to the point where we've been pushing a four-year degree is one of the main paths that you can have a career. Fortunately, the DFL very wisely last year put in a new committee with the chair of Representative Pawlowski on trades and industrial education being taught in our schools. I'm not going to get on my soapbox because I think we all recognize, and if we don't, we ought to have our heads examined, that the trades are an area in which we need to push for those who aren't seeking a four-year degree. And I'm on the committee with President Pawlowski. I think it works well in tangent with the tax committee, Mr. Chair, that heck, we have a trucking company here in Delano, Auto Transfer. He says he'll start new truckers at $60,000, and in a couple of years, they could be making $100,000 with benefits. So we must push the trades and work together with the colleges, universities, and our elementaries, middle schools, and high schools going forward. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to Representative Herr for this bill. I just wanted to say two things. One was, I don't serve on higher ed right now, but I did in my last term. And, you know, as sort of an intersection with the tax committee, I found this article that talked about the way that in inflation adjusted dollars, state and federal investment in public education has just been on a steady downward trend, like investment in a lot of different public goods across the sort of spectrum of what the of sort of government services. And so I just bring that up because I think that it does, kind of compel us to think about, like, you know, I think that some people who serve in the legislature maybe came of age and went to college in a time that was different economically than what students and younger people are facing today. And that is about this trend writ large kind of in government to kind of move back on investment in the sort of basic public good. So that's just something for us to keep in mind. The other piece that I wanted to mention, because Chair Becker Finn no longer serves on the tax committee, unfortunately for her and us, because the tax committee is the best committee. But she always was really good at reminding us about sort of, you know, people, like I'm 40, and so my mom's in her 60s, and I have a kid in, you know, in grade school. But like, there are a lot of people who get caught in this space of like childcare bills, aging parents, mortgage, student loans. And, you know, it really constrains. I mean, you heard from our testifiers the way that kind of having to make those trade-offs really constrains their lives. So I just wanted to bring that into the conversation. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And thanks again, Representative Herr, for this really great bill.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Representative Bajaj.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing forward this important bill. I think we've talked about it a lot. This is so necessary for the state of Minnesota. I think there are just so many people in the state and around the country that are really suffering under these student loans. And it really makes the ability to kind of move forward with your life and make decisions really hard when a significant chunk of your paycheck is going back to paying loans that people told us we had to do. And I do want to actually build on what Representative McDonald said. You know, trades are really important. I think we can do all of it. But a lot of our students who are going into various trade professions, some of them are also coming out with large amounts of debt, like teachers and caregivers and nurses. And so we want to just make sure that this bill is a step up for people. And so making sure that what we're doing in the state of Minnesota is making sure more students can come here, live the full life that they want, and they're not burdened with the debt. So thank you again, Representative Herr, for bringing this forward. Just wanted to add that. Thanks.
So I do have, thank you, Representative. I do have Chair Davids on the list. Any other members have any questions or comments before I move to Chair Davids? Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I would simply like to thank Representative Herr for bringing this bill forward. When we worked on this bill back in 2017, and Chair Marquardt, you were there, you were part of the discussion. And, you know, I was concerned that I would be running into some roadblocks from business. But actually what happened was the businesses came out supporting this as a recruitment tool. So we had pretty much a coalition of everybody to do this. And so with Representative Herr working on expanding this, let's take it out for a spin. You know, the price tag, the fiscal note right now is a little bit higher, but as the Davids rule was, we're going to talk about issues, not cost at this point, and we'll figure the cost out later. But I want to thank Representative Herr. Thank you. And hopefully, and I don't know if businesses have approached you or you may wish to approach them. When I say business, I mean the chamber, I mean the NFIB, I mean the business partnership, and others that really supported what we did in 2017. And hopefully we could get some letters of support from them. I didn't see any, maybe there are some out there, but this is a great recruiting tool for the businesses to use. So Representative Herr, thank you very much. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I think you bring up a great point. I mean, let's say you've got a person who's going to get $3,000 in the state credit as a recruitment tool, as you say, a business could say, hey, we'll match that. You know, if a person has a $30,000 loan, they could work 5 years for that business and get that loan basically paid off. So thank you, Chair Davids. That's a great point. So so Representative Herr, any final comments?
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and thank you, committee, for hearing this bill. I really appreciate the bipartisan approach to looking at how we support everyday Minnesotans. Chair Davids, I just want to say again, I thank you for your leadership on this work. You know, when I wasn't even a part of this legislature, I was benefiting from all of the work of those who came before me, and I want to continue to build on that. I did just want to share really quickly on a point that Representative Gomez made about how times are different. You know, I think that we have to take into consideration all that spoke today. No one was sitting around not working, not caring about just taking on this huge amount of debt. It was like people who really thought they were doing the right thing and making all the best decisions that they could and doing everything they could, working multiple jobs. And, you know, life happens. And that these, you know, are people who are rational, who worked really hard to obtain their degrees and now is dealing with all of this increased debt. And not because they were irresponsible in choosing what they were trying to invest in, but that times are different. You know, we have first-gen families who struggled to survive so that they couldn't have the luxury of saving for their child's education. We had non-traditional students who went back to school, as one of our testifiers mentioned, after the 2009 financial meltdown, which led to people not having time to have saved up money to go back to continue their education. We have working-class Minnesotans who looked like they were doing really well, but because they were just above certain income levels, didn't qualify for anything else except for loans. And so I want us to understand this is everyday Minnesotans. And for those who have paid off their school loans, what I've heard quite a bit about is people feeling upset that we were giving people support when, you know, for some reason, if this was an unfair way to deal with this issue. And I just want to say that, you know, I'm one of those people who actually paid off my school loan. And I never for one moment feel like we are that taking away from someone like me. And I don't think that I am any more deserving than anybody else who came after me. I graduated in 1995. I owed just under $20,000 in school loan debt. I'm a first gen to go to college. My parents were refugees. They did not have savings for me. I didn't qualify for hardly any grants because of their income level, even though we were just living above poverty. And I ended up having to take out loans. And I was able to pay off my school debt. But when I went to school, It was a very different time. When I got out, I could buy a house. My first house was $83,000. Right now, the average home price in Minnesota is $250,000. Wages have stagnated since 2009, and only recently have we seen increases to this. Times are different, and we need to adjust our policies to address the fact that times are different and how we support everyday working class Minnesotans so that they can also contribute into the economy and society the way that we hoped that they would be able to if they went to college. And so thank you, committee, for hearing this bill. And Chair, I renew my motion that House File 3072 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Very good. Representative Herr renews her motion to lay over House File 3072 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Herr, thank you so much for your presentation today and for all your work on this important bill. Thank you much. So next we have House File 2900. Representative Frazier, and I'm just going to make sure he's here before we do anything
else. I am here, Chair.
Very good. All right, Representative Frazier. Who would like to move House File 2900?
So moved, Chair Marquardt.
Representative Hurt moves House File 2900 to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And members, again, I remind you there will be a roll call vote on this when we're done. So before we go further, Representative Herr, would you like to move the A5 author's amendment?
Yes, Chair Mark, I'd like to move the A5 author's amendment.
Very good. Representative Frazier, welcome to the committee. Would you like to explain the A5 author's amendment before I have you go to the general bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and lead and committee members, thank you for having me here to present this bill today, get into this amendment. This amendment really kind of puts the bill in the shape that the author wants it. It clarifies some things that we've heard throughout the committee hearings that we've been to so far, and it clarifies them in a way it was a true intent of the bill, but we put this language in to clarify. We made clear that private school employees will qualify as frontline workers if they meet the criteria for qualification. We increased the income limits because we wanted to make sure that we were including spousal or partner workers that were joint filers that worked directly with COVID-19 patients that had contracted the virus. That came up in one of the committee hearings. We wanted to make sure those folks were intended to be captured. We upped the income levels to make sure that they will be captured here. We also included language to clarify for individuals that are on public service loan forgiveness plans, they have to file separately. So we're allowing them to make sure we capture them. We're allowing them to use the limit of the married tax filer to make sure we capture those individuals as was intended in the initial drafting of this bill. And another piece that we wanted to make sure we added was the idea that employers, they only have to contact and notice current workers, not workers that are no longer employed with them. That was something that came up, and the intent was always for them to only notify their current workers. The other pieces are technical pieces that were requested by some of the administrative departments that are going to be administering the actual bill and application process. But I just wanted to point out those specific things because those capture the intent of the bill, and there were questions that came up during the process that I want to make sure people knew that we were taking care of those.
Thank you so much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the author of the amendment, I'm looking at the A5 amendment. Which line on the amendment shows the increase in income eligibility?
Representative Frazier and or even potentially House research staff. Representative Frazier, we got Mr. Williams on line here. Do you want to answer or refer to?
I'll refer to Mr. Williams. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. All right, Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo, it's lines 1.6 and 1.7 of the amendment are increasing the income eligibility limits for individuals that had direct contact with individuals that had COVID-19.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And to Mr. Williams, so we see four numbers listed on those lines. So we're replacing 150 with 150,000 with 250,000. We're replacing 175,000 with 350,000. I don't have enough monitors to scroll back and forth. So I'm assuming that that first number is for individuals who are single. The second number is for married filing jointly. Is that correct?
Representative Frazier, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Garofalo. Any further questions on the A5 amendment? All right, it sounds like I do not need a roll call on the A5 amendment. So if I could ask members to unmute themselves as we vote on the A5 amendment, the HER motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The A5 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Frazier, if you could, you know, the tax committee, we're primarily interested in the tax component of this, which is Article 2, Subdivision 8 of the bill. But usually, if you could generally talk about the bill, and members certainly, you can talk generally about the bill, but the only area I really want to get into the weeds on, if you will, is going to be those tax portions of the bill. So, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, lead committee members. Thanks again for having me. So just quickly, this is House File 2900, which is frontline workers pay. As we all know, the last 2 years, we've been in the midst of this pandemic. But when we went into our stay-at-home order, many of us were able to shelter in place and not expose ourselves to other individuals that may have the virus, and we were able to keep ourselves from safe from contracting the virus and bringing it back to our families. Our frontline workers were not able to do that. Our frontline workers had to go into work day in and day out, exposing themselves and possibly taking the virus back home and exposing their families as well. Because of the work that they did, our frontline workers, we were able to continue to move forward as an economy and as a state, while many of us were able to shelter in place at home. Our economies kept going, and that is the reason that we have such an unprecedented surplus that we have right now. Now, we have called our frontline workers heroes. We've said it over and over again. We also promised that we would take care of them. We got to a point where we had $250 million pot of money that we were supposed to get out to those frontline workers. We were unable to do that. We've made promises to them. This bill will fulfill that promise. This bill will lay out the process for these frontline worker employee, for these frontline workers to be eligible for checks of up to $1,500 for us to honor the work that they have done, and it is long overdue. The bill is pretty straightforward. If you worked in person because of the nature of your job and one of the frontline sectors listed in the bill around people outside your household and for at least 120 hours during the peacetime emergency, which was from March 15, 2020 through June 30th, 2021, and you meet the income limits, you will be eligible for the resources of up to $1,500 checks. That is the eligibility. That is a front, the quick overview of the bill. I will stand for any questions. Oh, reason we're here in taxes, these will be these will be excluded. These payments will be excluded as income, as stated as income taxes. It will also be excluded in a way so it doesn't impact any current public benefits the individuals are getting. This is meant to be an honor of the work that the frontline workers did, and we don't want to penalize them in any way.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Frazier. So when it comes to the taxes, this frontline pay would be considered a subtraction, which means that amount would be subtracted. Basically, it would not be taxed. So
that is correct, Chair.
Very good. So before we go to members, is there anyone that would like to testify on House File 2900 as amended? I'm not seeing any, nor am I having any indication from my...
That's correct, Chair. No testifiers today.
Okay, and I don't... All right, so members, comments, questions for Representative Frazier? Representative Sandell.
Hello, and thank you, Chair Marquardt and Representative Frazier. I certainly support the idea and will vote for the bill, but I wonder what the difference is and what the advantages of, as I understand, subtracting the $1,500 from one's income rather than giving a tax credit, which would allow a $1,500 benefit to the frontline worker.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sandell, thank you for this question. We did, as we were developing the process that we do this, and we also had, the state of Louisiana came in and gave us a presentation on a program they put in place, and we're also looking at programs from other places around the country. We talked with DEED and DOLI in New York, that will be administrating this program. This was really the best way and the most efficient way to do it. It would have been tougher. It would have been a harder situation to do it during the tax credit way. And so we wanted to go with the thing that was most efficient, most effective, and try to get the resources out as quickly as possible once we get it passed out of legislature.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you for the work, too. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Can you tell us the pathway forward for your bill should it pass out of committee? Is this going to be staying on its own, or is it going to be merged with the unemployment insurance fix that we're seeing being progressed?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. The pathway is to move this out of committee, move it to the floor, and vote on it.
Representative Garofalo.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frazier, this isn't going to be attached to the unemployment insurance fix bill.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, the pathway is to get it voted out of committee, move it to the floor, and vote on it. Pass it out of the House.
Mr. Chairman and
Representative
Frazier,
Garofalo.
I hear that. Representative Frazier, if I'm stating it in an improper way where if the answer is you just can't answer that question, then just we can move on. But I just want to know if it's going to be attached to the other bill or not. I recognize that that may mean that it passes the House floor attached to something else. Just our side of the aisle doesn't know if it's going to be merged with that other bill, if these vehicles are going to be separate. And if the answer you've given me is the answer you're giving me, I can respect that. I think that gives me an answer. If you want to elaborate, please do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything more, Representative Frazier, or it's been asked and answered probably.
It has, Representative Garofalo. I'm not trying to play around with you. I'm being honest. That is the path that I see as the author of the bill is to move it on to the floor and get it voted out and try to get this in place as soon as possible so these workers can get these resources.
Very good. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little friendly advice to the author. When a tax bill goes to the House floor, I hope you're prepared for what can happen at that point. And you might want to talk to Chair Marquardt on that issue itself. But I really, and Representative Frazier, I thank you so much for carrying this bill. This should have been done a year ago or so. $250 million was the number I was looking at. So regretfully, I mean, I support the frontline workers as much or more than anybody, but I can't support some of the other provisions in the bill and the amount, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about the tax provisions, which I think are very, very good, and I don't know who would be opposed to those. So, but with that, I'm a big supporter of the frontline workers, but the number that we were told some months ago was $250 million, and now we're up over $1 billion with some other provisions that need to be worked on. But thanks for carrying this. We'll work on this as it goes forward. And again, you might want to reconsider having a bill with tax provisions on the House floor on its own, because there can be some shenanigans that happen and some skullduggery and things such as that. So you might want to talk to Chair Marquardt about that. But thank you, Representative Frazier, for carrying this, and I look forward to going forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Any other questions, comments from members?
Mr. Chair, if I could just...
Representative Frazier.
Yeah, Chair Davis, thank you for those comments. I will tell you this, the $250 million, it was a good start, but it was just a number. It wasn't based on actual figures. This $1 billion, it is based on over 700,000 workers being eligible and it's based on 667,000 workers actually applying to get this resources. So that's those real people that we're working day in and day out, real families that will be impacted by this, real workers that we'll be honoring. So, but I appreciate your comments.
Anything else, members? If not, Representative Frazier, any closing comments on House File 2900 as amended?
No, I would urge a yes vote to move to keep this moving so we can get it to the floor as quickly as possible, and hopefully there's action taken in the Senate. And Mr. Garofalo, Rep. Garofalo, that may answer the question that you have, what happens in the Senate. I can't call it because I'm not in the Senate, but looking forward to moving this forward for our workers.
Very good. So Representative Herr has a motion to refer House File 2900 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. And members, we will take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt votes aye.
Representative Marquardt, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lislegard, aye. Representative Davids.
Davids, no.
Representative Davids, no. Representative Agbaje.
Aye.
Representative Agbaje, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Carlson, aye. Representative Detmer.
Detmer, no.
Representative Detmer, no. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, no.
Representative Garofalo, no. Representative Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Representative Gomez, aye. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, no.
Representative Hertas, no. Representative Howard.
Howard, aye.
Representative Howard, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, no.
Representative McDonald, no. Representative Miller. Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Moran, aye. Representative Mortensen is excused. Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Robbins, no. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Representative Sandell, aye. Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Representative Schultz, aye. Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson, aye. Representative Swazinski.
Swazinski, no.
Representative Swazinski, no. Representative Joachim.
Joachim, aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. We have 12 ayes and 7 noes.
Thank you much. There being 12 ayes and 7 noes. House File 2900 as amended. The motion does prevail and it is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Frazier, so much for presenting the bill today. And I also forgot to mention Representative Swazinski was here early on in the meeting. I don't think I ever made note of that, but he was here right from the get-go. So I apologize for that, Representative Swazinski, for not announcing that earlier. So members, next week we're going to have meetings we meet tomorrow, of course, and then next week we plan to meet each day of next week, and I'll talk more about that tomorrow. But members, thank you so much for your work today, and with that, we are adjourned.